The Press Box is here to catch you up on the latest media stories. Hosted by Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker, these guys have the insight on the biggest stories you care about. Check out The Press Box on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of two, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles, from executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
So just a quick note before we start, a content warning for one particular incident we'll discuss. The content warning relating to charges of attempted rape, controlling and coercive behavior, and assault occasioning actual bodily harm. That's just an issue we'll be discussing at the top of the program in relation to charges leveled and then dropped against a prominent footballer. For those who don't want to hear that aspect of the show, please skip forward to the next section in the show. We'll also include some links to resources on the relevant issue in the show notes for those who want to check them out. Hello and welcome back to the Stadio podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right, thanks, man. I was deciding whether to start trying to introduce some very, you know, make that bit a bit, you know, and actually just I'm a different thing each time.
Like The Simpsons.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, yeah, I'm in short, I'm fine. How are you?
All good. Well, you know, there's an option. Very well, thanks. There is snow here in Berlin. Where you are not at the moment. There is snow here in Berlin, and it is beautiful. There was a very excited child in the courtyard outside.
Was it you? Was it you doing snow angels at 6:30 this morning?
There were two very excited children outside in the yard. One was 43. One was a 43-year-old man, and one was an actual conventional child-sized child. So yes, there were two children.
Everything else all good?
Yes. All good. Well rested. I was in Hamburg last week reading in German, which I told you about, which is very exciting. And I was out with friends and I was watching football. And so like all is well in my footballing and personal universe.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. Good.
In my football universe, it is not, well, it wasn't well, but then it was fine.
Because it is fine, isn't it? Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's just football.
Exactly. So,
shall we do some admin? Because everyone loves
it. Actually, before we start the admin, someone tweeted the other night, one of the best quotes I saw, someone said, "It's the Grammys tonight and the next episode of The Last of Us. Let's all argue about things that don't matter." I thought that was
brilliant. Speaking of The Last of Us.
I've seen it.
You've caught up, although neither of us have seen episode 4 yet because it's only just aired. It aired overnight our time. So you finally caught up and I told you, I said, leave me a voice note as soon as you've seen episode 3. And not gonna lie, Musa, it was one of the most beautiful goddamn voice notes I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, that is an extraordinary.
And it was basically Musa just being like, "I'm too emotional to leave this voice note, but you asked me to leave this voice note, so I'm leaving you the voice note."
Yeah,
wow. Yeah. And then that was it. It just went. What a show, huh?
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
It's really great when a show that gets so much hype is actually really, really good. It's like when Solange drops an album.
Right, exactly. It's exactly that.
The heads and the mainstream unite and they're just like, yes.
I think Solange is the best parallel you could have used for that show, really.
Wow, thanks, because man.
She was just someone who was just there and then she dropped and everyone was like, okay, this is a...
Whew. Anyway, yes. Last of Us, great. Solange, great.
Yeah.
Football.
Yeah. Mixed.
But first of all, we hope everyone's staying safe and well, and anyone affected by what happened in Turkey and Syria overnight.
Yeah, the earthquake
there is absolutely horrific. Just sending all our love out to anyone affected by that and anyone who lost their lives.
Yeah, large death toll being reported. And also, like, you know, given that area, you know, particularly Syria, is an area that's been affected by over a decade of some of the worst conflict the world has seen in modern times, or any time, frankly.
If you can spare anything at the moment, and please, there are multiple organizations worth donating to that are doing really, that will be essential in helping out there. So if you can, that would be amazing. So admin. Okay, first bit of admin is there's no show on Thursday.
There is not.
You all get a Thursday off, like a snow day.
Yes.
Everyone listens like, yes, thank God. No show on Thursday. We'll be back next week. Righty's House will be up Tuesday morning. And you and I will be on Righty's House on Friday. So there you go.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, don't forget, if you want to come see us at King's Place, Musa, Flo, Ian and I think there are still some tickets available. They're going pretty quick though. Thursday night, King's Place. We tweeted the link on our Twitter. Go and check that out.
Yep.
Onto the show today, we're going to do... It's going to be pretty Premier League heavy, I think.
Yeah.
We'll do a quick roundup of some other stuff in Europe. Derby, Della Maddalena, Barcelona, looking around like John Travolta, being like, anyone else going to win this weekend in Spain? And some other bits and bobs. But we'll probably swerve Liga this week. And I think that's everything. So obviously, since we last spoke, and I should put a content warning here.
Yeah, so... we're going to mention a case of a footballer who was charged with attempted rape, controlling and coercive behaviour, and assault occasioning actual bodily harm.
Yeah, we're not actually going to reference the details of the case, but if you don't want to listen to this, please skip forward to the next thing in the show notes.
Yeah.
Also, we'll put some resources in there if you want to, for anyone who is affected by anything we're discussing. But we're going to keep it very, very brief.
Yeah. So just to recap very briefly, the Crown Prosecution Service has discontinued charges against Mason Greenwood. The charges of attempted rape, controlling and coercive behaviour, and assault occasioning actual bodily harm. Those charges discontinued after key witnesses withdrew their involvement and new material coming to light, meaning there's no longer a realistic prospect of conviction. So the Crown Prosecution Service saying, in these circumstances, we are under a duty to stop the case. So that's where things are with the criminal investigation. With Manchester United, there's still a decision to be made as to how they'll proceed with Mason Greenwood's employment, further employment, all the rest of it.
If you did miss it, Manchester United released a statement afterwards saying, Manchester United notes the decision of the Crown Prosecution Service that all charges against Mason Greenwood have been dropped. The club will now conduct its own process before determining next steps. We will not make any further comment until that process is complete. So I think actually they handled that pretty well, Manchester United, in the aftermath, just to be like, we're going to look into this, we're not going to say any more, but basically he's not playing at the moment.
I think in the immediate aftermath, the key needs to be to sort of take a serious and deliberate approach, I think, is necessary in the immediate aftermath. And what I'll say as well, and just on this, because this is a conversation that we discussed, sort of took up at the end of January, actually, for a podcast. We did then, I think, the 31st of January, we released the podcast on this. And there's, you know, there's a certain amount you can discuss in relation to ongoing legal matters and the sensitivity around sexual assault matters this nature, especially so. But what I'll just say very briefly on this, Ryan, is because there's not much more, having thought back to that last podcast, but there's not much more I can add, and certainly in a public setting. There's just something to be said about the seriousness of these charges was not met with the same seriousness of discussion, of discourse. I think that was very disappointing. And I'll say this on a briefly personal note. I have seen situations where these investigations have been carried out. So I'm aware of the complexity. I'm aware of how long it takes to examine, investigate, bring these issues to some kind of legal resolution, trial, whatever. I've seen this stuff. And it was really disappointing in the public eye to see how flippantly this was discussed again. Like, there's jokes, there's banter, there's talks of accusations and like money grabbing. Look, it's a really bleak indictment of our society, actually. There's not much more I have to say about it than that, really. It's just that really disappointing again to see the lack of seriousness with which so many, not saying that not, but not all by all means, of course, but just I think the lack of seriousness that I saw around a lot of this discussion.
Yeah, there was two podcasts. There were two podcasts that I'd like to refer people to that we did. 31st of January, 2022. And we started the show with the Greenwood stuff because I think that was when he'd just been suspended by the club. And the podcast that we did on the 11th of August, 2022, which was about an unnamed Premier League footballer who is currently on bail. And just a quick reminder for anyone who is in any doubt, there is a very specific reason why we are not mentioning that person, because legally we cannot. I'd refer people to those two podcasts because we have basically said, I think, in those two shows, everything that we would have said today. And I feel that it's quite a traumatic experience for people, especially, I think, especially women football fans who have to hear and see, as you said, just the trivial nature that it's spoke about in the aftermath, even during sometimes. And I would urge again, just caution on everyone and sensitivity, because even the smallest thing might be particularly traumatic to someone, and it's worth taking that into consideration when going anywhere near that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like we'll probably leave it there on that particular case. I think we will learn a little bit more because from the Manchester United response, because I can't really remember a situation like this.
Mm. And then, look, can I say this as well? Like, this is not maybe a consolation to many listeners, but there's so much more I'd like to say about these issues generally. But my background, the work I've done, like, and my understanding of legal processes, and also just being a lawyer by training, it just means there's a level of caution you always have to have in these discussions. But yeah, it's a bleak day, actually. It's a bleak day for anyone who's ever experienced sexual assault. Because having to see the surrounding, I'll put it better. The Qatar World Cup is the worst unleashing of homophobia I think I've ever seen in relation to football in a public setting. It's the worst. And the misogyny and the unpleasantness in general unleashed around this case and ongoing sexual assault cases in football, it's been some of the worst I've seen in recent months, and it doesn't feel like progress, I'll say that much. The surrounding conversation atmosphere, it feels very much like the opposite of progress.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Premier League. So I think we start with Everton because
we have to.
This was such a massive result for Everton.
Yeah.
It was one of two extremely predictable results from the weekend. I actually texted a friend before and after being like, I think I said it in the Wright's House group, this is the most predictable result of all time.
It was.
Everton 1, Arsenal 0. 15 Everton managers in a row now, including Sean Dyche, have been unbeaten in their first game in charge.
That's unreal.
So Everton are the masters of the new manager bounce.
That's incredible. It's incredible.
I mean, first of all, it's worth saying that Arsenal were not at their very best by any means, but I think a lot of that was down to how Everton engaged them higher up the pitch.
Mm.
Formation change. Very smart from Sean Dyche. And the thing that you could see is that this was kind of what we were saying all along about Everton in terms of like, they kind of can't really go down, can they? Like, look at who they have. Like, they can't, you know, like there were points last season where we were like, surely they're too good to go down if you actually look at the personnel.
The quality, yeah, the actual, yes, thank you. Yeah.
There's a really good thread that I want to recommend by Joel Parker. I think it's at Joelissimo on Twitter. Where he basically breaks down the formation shift to 4-5-1 and how that was responsible for triggering the counter press. And he details through a few tweets in that thread specific examples of how Everton engaged Arsenal in the press. And it was super interesting.
Mm.
And it was completely by design. And that threw Arsenal off. and they just couldn't really get into a rhythm or get into anywhere near the level that we've seen them this season.
It was just Everton just closed all the gaps masterfully. And, you know, there's no better example of that than watching Bukayo Saka and Eddie Nketiah snatching at chances. Snatching at chances, slashing shots high or wide or both, where these are players in excellent goal scoring form with real poise. And when you see players who are in great form doing that, it's because they know that in that specific game, the gaps are so small, there's a split second to execute. And that throws them off, right? Because they're like, there isn't the extra split second to measure yourself and crash one in. There just isn't. And that, to me, was fascinating in the game, watching players who are in form forced out of their rhythm. And that is all credit to Everton. All credit to Everton. You're built with a 4-5-1 base, and that allows you, when you're basically a shock absorber at that point, it's what is Everton basically is like watching someone, it was like watching Arsenal punch a block of blue plasticine for 90 minutes. You do it for 90 minutes and the plasticine looks up and it's like, I quite enjoyed that. Like, thank you.
That sound of like,
thank you.
Oh, how horrible.
But I mean, it, and it was masterful what they did. The beauty of that formation, that solidity meant they could break quite effectively, because when you're playing that style, any attack is a bonus, right? Mm. So actually what that does is that you conserve their energy so well, you absorb the shock, you let Arsenal punch themselves out. And every now and again, you saw some breaks down the flanks, particularly the left flank, where they look quite interesting. Dominic Calvert-Lewin didn't score, but looked really, really,
very lively,
really busy, really imposing. Unlucky, I think, not to get that tap in the first half. It looked like a worse miss than it was, just because people don't understand, like, holding your line for the onside, and it happened to Kane again against City, holding your line for the to avoid the offside, especially now in the age of VAR. You know, we really don't really factor in how much strikers are checking their runs now.
I mean, the Lautaro one we'll talk about later.
By a shirt sleeve.
And a forehead.
Yeah, and he was convinced he was onside, because he's like, no, my movement's good.
Save it, because we're going to talk about the finger waggle.
We'll get into this, yeah. But so I think Everton, so much to be optimistic about from that first game.
Oh man, I don't think this could have gone any better for Everton.
No better, yeah. McNeil was excellent. I mean, just a bunch of them, all across.
There is something quite hilarious about an old Burnley 1-2 for the goal in Dyche's first game in charge. There is something almost too kind of like...
It's poetic.
Chef's kiss about it.
Yeah.
But I genuinely think Dyche is... He's a funny guy, man, because I think out of work, when he was interviewed, you could see like his coach's voice video, for example, was so interesting. And when he popped up on bits of media work throughout his time after Burnley, he seems like really, just really affable. Actually, someone that you can imagine being a really, really good interviewer. I watched a couple of really good interviews with him. And then it's almost like as soon as the suit goes on again, he's just like, it's classic Dyche-ism, you know?
He plays for camera, doesn't he? Because
he really does. But I think that's quite smart in the position that Everton are in, for example. Like in his post-match interview, he made a point of saying that some of the players made it clear that they felt they had let down the previous manager and coaching staff, which I think is quite a decent touch from Dyche, because I feel like it would be very easy for someone like that to come in and be like, well, I just sorted this lot out.
It's clever. You know? Continuity.
It is quite clever. My gut feeling, as soon as Dyche was announced, my gut feeling was they're going to be fine. Because if you look at who are around them, what Dyche will bring to that side, it's like we said, they just need to stay up. They just need to stay up. And if they stay up, then they can, like, unfortunately, this isn't the Everton that we thought we were going to get when James Rodriguez rocked up and Ancelotti was in charge. But I think you kind of have to forget that now. You have to go, Dyche even said it, we've got to start building basics, like building almost from the ground up again.
You remember those days are relevant only, they are relevant only insofar as they remind Everton what a big club they are. That's the limited relevance of them, in the sense that, like, you know, Everton are a huge club, and they shouldn't be in this degree of trouble, you know, either historically or in the current moment. And Dyche brings that experience. One thing I want to just flag up as well, I saw a great quote from Aaron Lennon talking about Dyche, saying how he was the one of the few managers that really asked how he was doing, like, as a human. I asked about his actual well-being, and that's not a thing that it was easy to broach. And I thought it was really fascinating because obviously Deitch has that kind of like the persona, but there's clearly so much more to him than just the man that, like, you know, showers in ice cubes and minus two, you know? So yeah, great win for Everton. Great win for Sean Dyche. Great to see him back doing his thing. And again, let's just look at the Premier League. We talked about the Premier League being stacked with great coaches. It's added yet another elite coach to the package, because Dyche is an elite coach. When we say elite in terms of what he can execute, the victories he's pulled off, the fact that peak Liverpool, under like peak Klopp's Liverpool, hated playing this man. Like this, that says it all.
It will be very easy to forget how he completely normalized Burnley as a top tier club.
It's wild.
The job that he did there is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
From an Arsenal point of view, they've been extremely lucky over the last couple of weeks, because they had that kind of almost glorious defeat against Manchester City in the Cup. A defeat couldn't have gone any better than that in terms of narrative afterwards.
Mm.
They followed it up with probably one of their poorest, I'm not taking anything away from Everton, but let's say the poorest result of the season so far in the league. And they absolutely got away with it thanks to Spurs, who beat Man City at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday. Again, the most predictable result. Man City do not like to win at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and they do not like to score at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Spurs really doing Arsenal a favour here, because Harry Kane broke Spurs' all-time goal-scoring record with 267 goals. He's the fastest to 200 Premier League goals ever. But top flight, very, very different, because, you know, he's miles behind Jimmy Greaves for goals scored in the top flight since World War II. I don't think that record will ever be beaten. I think Jimmy Greaves is like 300... Is it 368 or something like that?
Absolute beast.
It's just beast. Like, how is that possible? Like, wow.
Do you remember Lil Wayne was dropping all those guest spots and just was like, had the most incredible guest spots everywhere? Like, like everyone else had like 20 legendary guest spots and Lil Wayne had like 500. It's like that, just out by himself.
There you go.
Lil Greavesy.
I was really impressed with Spurs.
And so you look at the back three, Davis, Dyer, Romero. Romero was in pretty pugnacious mood. I mean, terrible challenge on Haaland, notwithstanding. But just in terms of Spurs setting the tone, we talk about shock absorbers and controlling space. You had Emerson Royale starting at the right flank, Pedro Porro on the bench. And maybe with a point to prove, because Emerson Royale was really, really strong in this game. And there just wasn't room for City to do what they wanted. And I think there's a story to be told about how this slow, deliberate City build-up, I've not seen a Manchester City side look this unthreatening in a long, long time. It just seemed like all the key parts were out of place or out of sync. So you had, they called it a 4-2-3-1, but it was basically a 4-4-2. Grealish and Mahrez. But playing not with urgency, not hurtling to the byline, but sort of quite compressed, tucking in. Bernardo Silva alongside Rodri in midfield, not the quickest midfield, of course. De Bruyne on the bench. Alvarez kind of hovering slightly beside alongside Haaland. And again, conversations about Haaland will continue. Oh, in the really big games, he gets closed out. Well, no, in the really big games, if the surrounding team plays with a lack of urgency, what is Haaland supposed to do? And actually, as brilliant as Spurs were, don't get me wrong, this is no discredit to Spurs, Manchester City also played absolutely into their hands. And I must admit, the thing that concerns me about Manchester City, Ryan, they don't have a change of pace, actually. They've got the kind of slow steamroller, right? But if you can withstand the slow steamroller, what have they got at this specific point? And we've talked about players like Mudryk going elsewhere and them losing fast wingers. And I know that's a cliche, we keep talking about it, but this Man City side is the most vulnerable Man City I've seen since Pep got there. Since his first season when he didn't have the fullbacks he wanted. So since Pep got the players he wanted, it's the most vulnerable Man City team I've seen, which is, you know, they're still second. I know they're still second. And also, they're there to be got, Ryan. Like the pressure on Rodri to play in the ball into Højbjerg. Højbjerg breaks, plays it into Son.
That's a bad pass, though.
Yeah,
that
but should, no,
that either needs to go back to Edison, or that just needs to go.
Yes, it is.
But, to the other flank.
But look how quick they close the gaps around him.
I mean, it might be about to get worse because literally, as we're recording this now, it's dropped that Manchester City have been charged by the Premier League with numerous breaches of financial rules following this 4-year investigation that many people kind of forgot about because it had been taking so long. They've been hit with more than 100 charges of breaching rules by the Premier League. Possible sanctions if, this is from Martin Ziegler posted this, possible sanctions if found and proven include points deductions or even expulsion from the league. This is absolutely ginormous.
I mean, the fact that this is even mentioned as options.
We'll revisit that when we have a little bit more info and we'll dive into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But let's return to the football because we need to talk about Harry Kane.
Yes.
And we're going to give him a load more flowers on Wrighty's House. But for a decade, he's been probably one of the two or three best strikers in the Premier League throughout that whole period.
And at 1 or 2 points, maybe the best nine in the world at 1 or 2 points. If you look at the era he's been in, Kane, Lewandowski, Benzema, to a slightly lesser extent. I mean, once Benzema's finishing really sorted out, but certainly Kane and Lewandowski, for the period that Lewandowski was ruling the roost at Bayern, Harry Kane was alongside him most consistently, I would say, as the out and out. Those two are the out and out nines. And then Aguero, of course, like once Aguero like declined. So it was Kane and Lewandowski, I think, for a certain period where they were like, there wasn't that much between them. And it's incredible. The clean striking of the ball, the decisiveness, the huge games he does it in. Because the thing, it's not just like, it's the derbies. And like the, he scores goals. He's especially good in massive matches, isn't he? That's the thing that's remarkable about Kane.
I mean, all-time goal scorer in, top goal scorer in North London derbies.
Wild. Yeah, incredible. Which says something considering how much Henri feasted in that fixture.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think, I'm glad he got to do it at home as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah. And in a game of that magnitude.
Yeah, because it was a massive game. Like, an absolutely massive game. And I think for... just a shout for Christian Stellini as well, who has got, like, an unfuckwithable record when he's taken over as Spurs manager. Give him the job! Give him the job! Just kidding. But it was a really nice touch from... afterwards, you see it, Conte called Harry Kane.
I didn't see. No, that's lovely.
Cute. Oh, that's apparently, nice. Conte wanted to be there. The doctors were like, sit down.
Of course he wanted to be there.
What are you doing?
Of course.
Can you imagine if Conte, just after having gallbladder surgery, running up and down the touch like, no, this sit
most,
down.
This is the most Conte thing ever.
I wonder if he could have convinced them to let him be pitch side, but like in a kind of like comfy hospital bed / lazy boy.
We're going to find out he was there wearing prosthetic something. We're going to find out one day, years
like
later.
Mourinho snuck in the kit box.
In the laundry truck.
To be honest, it was as important a win for Spurs as it was for Arsenal because it pushed Spurs up to within a point of Newcastle, even though Newcastle have played a game less than Spurs. But they're only 3 points behind Manchester United now as well. Just one more thing on this.
Mm.
Christian Romero red.
Mm.
The third most predictable thing this weekend after that first yellow, which was outrageous. That first yellow on Haaland.
It's an orange card. It's an orange card.
It was such a silly decision. And to be honest, I'm surprised that's probably the only negative from the Spurs point of view in terms of like how the game was managed and that I think he probably should have been taken off. It was like holding against Man City in the cup.
Mm. He came in hot. Romero came in hot with that tackle, for sure.
Elsewhere in the Premier League, Wolves beating Liverpool 3-0. And the only word that I have next to this is yikes.
Oh my God, that's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly what
really?
I was going to say. Yeah, I was literally going to say yikes.
It's still a podcast.
Do you know, what frightened me about this from a Liverpool perspective, Ryan, the lack of intensity in defence. You look at like Joel Matip and Joe Gomez and slow to the ball. You saw it with Kalulu. It's a similar thing. You know what it is? It's when a defender takes a first step to the ball to take responsibility to clear it. And you see, it's the telltale sign, the lack of intensity. Joel Matip was slow to sprint. And if you don't, you know, if you're not a proactive defender, then footballing destiny takes care of itself. If you do, if you're not proactive, football will make a choice for you. You saw Joel Matip, you saw Joe Gomez. To watch Ruben Neves walk through the Liverpool central defence and Gomez was watching that, I was thinking, and this is not to like, I feel bad even mentioning individual players because it's a systemic thing. That doesn't happen. It doesn't have Liverpool's defensive peak. It doesn't happen when the spine of Van Dijk and Sadio Mane is there setting the tone. It just doesn't happen. And this Liverpool team, you see like Jurgen Klopp at the side of the field, just like bewildered by what's happening and saying the third goal didn't really count because the first time Wolves entered their half. But he says all that because that's Jurgen Klopp flailing, basically. That's him understanding that we've lost altitude really fast. And the problem is it's not just an individual player, it's a collective, a collective malaise. This was the greatest.
It really, really doesn't help that they've got Virgil van Dijk, Roberto Firmino, Luis Diaz, Ibrahima Konate, Diogo Jota, and Artur all missing.
It doesn't help, but there's a diagonal pass that Robertson plays. Andrew Robertson plays a diagonal pass towards his own goal that he has not played. I've not seen a pass that loose from an Andrew Robertson in such a while. And I don't watch Liverpool every week, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But this is one of the most solid, dependable players. And when you see him playing a pass back towards his own centre-backs like that, as he did in the second half, I was thinking, no, it's all, even the personnel who are still there are struggling. They're struggling with getting the machine going. And you could tell it's like when you've got a flat battery. It's like watching someone with a flat battery trying to restart it by like, just like doing whatever they can. And they can't restart at the moment, Liverpool. And it's, you can see a team visibly struggling to figure it out. And this, again, it sounds, I don't want to sort of discredit Wolves because they will know how much work they put in and how brilliantly well, what a brilliant result this is. And it sounds kind of like doing Liverpool down rather than giving Wolves credit. And it's not that. Wolves did apply pressure. It's just that Wolves applied substantial, significant, incredible pressure. João Moutinho was brilliant yet again. But even they must have been baffled by how quickly Liverpool folded, if that makes sense.
Yeah, just aura is a funny thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I feel like Liverpool have had, I mean, this is essentially the second time we've seen this under Klopp. And I feel like Liverpool kind of sometimes should be examined in their own little microclimate because of what they have done over the last few years to continually go up against Manchester City. And if it wasn't for Liverpool, then what, City have had five straight? I mean, with this announcement of from the Premier League, it looks like it makes that achievement even better. And Liverpool had to cope with that in a couple of more titles.
They should have. In any other era, Liverpool win 3 or 4 out of 5 leagues.
It's so hard to maintain that level over that amount of time. You've seen like Chelsea have been unable to do it since they won the league 6 years ago. Manchester United have really struggled in the past decade. Liverpool have been up and down. Spurs had that period where they looked like they were about to challenge. Arsenal haven't really been anywhere near there since they dropped out of the Champions League, or even before that, really, until now. So I think it's very, very easy to underestimate how much toll that takes on a team. And if you then have a kind of physical breakdown in terms of a large number of injuries that happen at a certain amount of time, the knock-on effect from that, it's almost like when you lose your aura, your flow in football, it feels like you're playing in a whirlpool, you know, and you just cannot get out of it. Whereas when everything's fine and clicking and playing well, it's almost like skaters on a half pipe. It's just like, it's just rhythm and momentum. And you just like, you just keep going and going and going. And it's interesting how difficult it seems to be Liverpool to get out of those slumps when they've hit them. And they've hit them after seasons that have been potentially huge for them, like obviously winning the league, winning the Champions League, going to the Champions League final, potentially winning the quadruple last year. That was a very high intensity, emotionally charged season. I think it took a huge amount out of them. And honestly, now, very simplistic way to say it, but it's just kind of damage limitation until the end of the season. There's no men's international tournament in the summer.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it's just basically gearing up for next season.
This feels like Sir Alex Ferguson in 2005-2006 when there was talk rumbling about, oh, perhaps Sir Alex has passed it and maybe should move on. And very respected commentators were saying that. And it was, you know, it was mainstream thought. It's not to like dig out those commentators because they were saying only what they were seeing. And I think, you know, it's not, it's not fair to say that a signing can redeem a club or rejuvenate, revitalize a club, but if they can pull off the Jude Bellingham signing, if they can pull off a signing like that, I think it, they need something transformative like that at this point. They need to give Klopp the tools to work with more, I think, at this point, if it's going to happen, if it's going to work, because the current cast of players, even with recoveries from injury, I think they need a freshness there. And this is, again, I say this once more just to finish this sort of segment, Liverpool. I say that with complete sympathy for the fact they've had to basically go up against a financial behemoth like City, charge all these things, and still take them that close. There's no other club, really, I can think, that would have run them as close as...
Not in the last few years. All right, a couple of other Premier League bits quickly. Big shout out to Nottingham Forest for beating Leeds on Sunday, because that's a huge win for them. Great goal from Johnson again. Leeds are in trouble, man.
It's just a tough... I look at that league table with just under half the season to go. I'd be a clown if I tried to call anything.
They've got Manchester United away next. Everton obviously go to Anfield for the derby, but they're all diched up. Oh my God. We should do some Everton bootleg tees that just say diched up. You know, in the 90s italic font, bold. Diced up, exclamation mark. Diced up.
Don't let me down.
I'm diced up. We're not going down. Diced up. What a stupid podcast.
Listen, I just work here.
But Leeds really don't want to be dragged into that, because if they get pulled into that bottom three, Jesus, what the hell is that?
It's the relegation siren.
Someone heard my dice stop, but it was too hot. They set the fire alarm off.
One of our takes.
Anyway, first of all, let's just praise Forest, because Forest, I think, are going to be okay. You know, they've been putting together a really good run of form. They've pulled away from the relegation zone, I think, to a far greater level than we expected them to in the early stages of the season.
Mm. Yeah,
that deserves a huge amount of credit for that.
He does,
because signed a huge amount. They've signed so many players, but I'm glad they're clicking. Should we talk about Southampton very quickly? Because I didn't like Nathan Jones's chat after the game at all.
I heard plenty about this. I've not seen it, so please, I defer to you. But yeah, I am. I've only heard
secondhand.
Long
story short, he said in the post-match interview that he'd had to pander a little bit to the players, and he essentially had to like abandon his principles and adapt, because, you know, Premier League players don't want to do this and don't want to do this. And then in the press conference, he was talking about like his reputation before he came to Southampton and his stats for, I think it was his pressing stats and his XG created or something like that when he was at Luton. If you look around Europe, it was like one of the best in Europe and all of this kind of stuff. And I was like, no offense, but when you've managed in the Championship and in the second and third tiers, let's say, and then you step up into the Premier League as a manager and you start saying that you're essentially your philosophies, players can't handle it, I think that's dangerous. Because I don't think it was a massively popular hire in the first place. I think a lot of Southampton fans were super underwhelmed by the appointment. I just feel that this is not going to end well. And I think it was a poor hire in the first place.
If you take that job, you get everyone to buy in.
Yes.
You get everyone to buy in by not hanging out to dry. Like, this is the thing. People are struggling already. The town, you know how it is, especially a club like Southampton, where there's that passion, the club is so identified with the city and vice versa. And everyone's pulling together and you're like, it's a unified front you need to present. And when you're going in there and going, actually, no one can really handle my X's and O's because I'm just too advanced for this. It's not the energy. You look at some of the, when Arsene Wenger arrived at Arsenal, right? What was the perception? Oh, here's someone from a small town, whatever, a small time league who hasn't got the chops. And what did Wenger do? He went in there and he got everyone invested in and involved in his process. Everyone. You didn't hear a peep out of Wenger about, oh, actually, I'm just too advanced for these people. He went in there and he engaged with some of the more conservative members of the dressing room, tactically speaking, and he made it work. And when you see players, when I see managers talk like this, part of me gets a bit nervous. I'm thinking, are you doing brand management for your potential next employers? Do you know what I mean? You're almost going like, listen, yes, I'm a fireman, but I got to the fire and it's the pesky kids' fault. They threw electrical stuff in the fire and that's why I can't put it out. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, and this is why I will always give, I think Frank Lampard did himself immeasurable credit in his final season at Everton by just talking up his players.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, there's actually no shame in losing 3-0 to Brentford at Brentford. There's actually no shame in that on the face of it. It's been done by, you know, United got absolutely cleaned out at Brentford in a far more dramatic fashion than what happened to Southampton. So you go to Brentford, you lose 3-0, you give plenty of credit to Thomas Frank and the Brentford players, outstanding addition to the Premier League. We love what they've done. They're a model club, blah, blah, blah. And you bounce. And you go back down the motorway and you talk to the team and you go, listen, let's get this right. We're all in a bit of trouble. Let's look at our best performances and we'll draw from those. And that's it. But now we shouldn't be having this conversation. He should not have given us the fodder for this conversation.
No, no way. I'm really worried about them.
Does that make sense? All of that?
Yeah.
Sorry to.
I'm really worried about them. You want to talk about Manchester United very quick? Obviously on that, today is the 65th anniversary of the Munich Air disaster. Something that was marked at the game on Saturday. Manchester United 2, Crystal Palace 1, Man United going 2-0 up.
Here's credit to Rashford for the winner again. Rashford just...
Man.
Do you know, there's a thing, there's two things that have been normalised very quickly in European football. Union Berlin's return to form after the winter break and Marcus Rashford's scoring streak. How has that man returned to an elite level so quickly after everything he's been through? Wow. I was looking back through old tweets. I mean, old chat, we were going like, does Rashford, like, should he maybe head out? Should he look somewhere else? Like, real.
We were actually kind of pretty supportive of that
happening.
PSG thing.
Yeah, leaning towards actually, because seeing, you know, obviously the new management at PSG, the new hierarchy, and actually how he could thrive there. And also not understanding how he might thrive at United. And you look at him now and he's like, he's undroppable. Marcus Rashford starts in almost any first team the Premier League put out. Yeah. Like if you had like a starting lineup, almost any, he starts on almost any one. Like he's marginally ahead of Martinelli right now, just in terms of just the goal scoring aspect. Like just as a forward, as Desi, they're broadly equal, but in terms of the goal scoring, I would say, just in terms of that.
Oh, for sure.
Martinelli are up there. He starts in almost any, like, World 11. Almost any World 11 at the current form. So, yeah, he's been spectacular. Shout out Ten Hag for developing him so well. And a win over a Crystal Palace team who have maybe gone sideways and slightly backwards this year. Caveats being they've lost, like, lost Conor Gallagher, who... was really, really good.
Key for them, yeah.
It was really interesting. Can I see this as well? I don't know if it's a coincidence, but Conor Gallagher's passing range against Fulham, that's the best I've seen him pass this season. And he was playing alongside Enzo Fernandez, who looked brilliant.
Very good.
Brilliant. But it was just fun to see Conor Gallagher playing like Enzo Fernandez. And I was like, because normally Conor Gallagher does the kind of like, you know, he's more box-to-box vibes, but this time he was like really just punching it through the gaps. And I was like, this is interesting.
I like that midfield, man. Also, Hakim Ziyech in for a shout of someone who looked the most pissed off to be told they were starting the game.
Played well, but did look very vexed.
On the way in, he was just like...
yeah, yeah. Bless him, he's a pro. He played well, though.
Yeah, he did. Well. He had a couple of missed chances, but apart from that. But good point for Fulham again.
Yeah.
Impressive this season. But yeah, back to Manchester United Palace. Anything about the kerfuffle?
Not particularly.
Do you know what I loved about the kerfuffle, though, is that I thought that was it for Anthony. I thought we might never see him in a Man United shirt ever again. And then all of a sudden he was fine. He was fine.
He was restored to powers. He was the powers of healing.
What the hell? What are you doing? Just that subgenre of football fuckery will never not be funny. Just like, oh my God. You know when Alex Ferguson, who was it who had the ball kicked in their face? And Alex Ferguson was like, you could have killed him. It's like... oh my God, is he dead? Is he
back
dead?
From the dead?
And then
back
he's just
from the
like,
he is risen. He is risen.
Unbelievable. Okay, quick shout for Leicester, an amazing win against Villa. 3-2 up at the end of the first half. That first half was absolutely wild. But that's a big, big win for them. Tete scoring on his debut. And Newcastle drawing 1-1 with West Ham at home.
Not a bad point for West Ham.
We're going to swerve the WSL because Flo and the gang will cover that on Counterpress, and we'll, Flo, Ian, and I will also chat about that on Wrighty's House. Shall we take a break and then do a quick roundup of stuff elsewhere?
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Very quickly, we'll discuss it another time in greater detail, either in a live show on the podcast, but Rafael Varane retiring from international football, citing just feeling gobbled up by the schedule. But that aside, the fact he's retiring from international football at 29, what an incredible career. Mm. What an incredible career. I mean, he hasn't retired from football overall, just the international game, but the man won one World Cup, went to another final, was an essential part of both first teams and squads, and also has won four Champions Leagues like it was nothing, playing every minute, I think, of every final, and just brilliant, an elite defender throughout. And someone who's probably going to enter history a little underrated just because he has very few moments that you could define as signature. And this is not like a kind of a disinvant thoughts, just because he's been so quietly brilliant for so long. I'll never forget there was a Clasico game where he was just chasing a player back, a forward back, and just engulfed him with speed. He's not got that explosive pace anymore, but just closing off gaps, snuffing out attacks while they even started, allowing Madrid to play extremely high up the pitch. And now he's gone to United and has been part of this revival, this incredible, like the speed of United's revival. And of course, they spent a hell of a lot of money, so there's that. But the way that Varane has just come in alongside Martinez as a partner and just raised the conversation, it's unreal, unreal player. So yeah, a truly, truly great defender for France. And you can see that by the tribute that Deschamps paid to him, because Deschamps knows what that man brought. Yeah, incredible.
A wonderful, wonderful tribute from someone who essentially stuck the curse on his whole career by tweeting about him that time.
Yeah.
Nice one. Shall we go to the continent?
Yes, yes, we shall. Yes, yes.
We'll start in Milan. The Derby della Madonnina, won by Inter, 1-0.
Wow. And they really, Milan really needed this. AC Milan really needed a win here. So Inter basically are now second. They're 13 points behind Napoli. Wild. Napoli just having a spectacular season. But Inter have, they came out, they are the best, they are the second best team in Serie A. And the frightening thing in this game was how far ahead of AC Milan they seemed at times, particularly in that first period. After about 50 minutes of the game, or just into the second half, Milan still had not completed 100 passes, and Inter had completed almost 400 at a higher pass completion rate. That was really worrying. Watching Inter move the ball around like they did, a team that knows exactly what it's trying to achieve, that's in sync with each other. Dzeko Martinez up front, five across the middle, dynamic centre midfield, and then AC Milan, who, you know, the defending champions, just an absolute disarray. Rafael Leao on the bench, Tonali starting to provide protection to the centre-backs. Kalulu, as I said earlier, like a step short on the ball, like lacking speed to the ball, which is something he didn't have before. Tataro Sanu in goal. And you see that Mike Maignan organising that back line, such a key loss for them. There's just disarray all over the field for Milan. And the frightening thing is the speed of the collapse of the self-esteem. And the most worrying thing in the entire game, I'll say, chasing the game 1-0 down, goal from Lautaro Martinez, who's been brilliant before and after the World Cup, quite frankly, been absolutely brilliant. Shout out to him, he's brilliant. The ball gets played in the counter. Rafael leads the counter-attack, having come on, and plays it to Giroud. And it's basically one touch and finish for a player in peak form. And Giroud takes a terrible touch, and the body language of Rafael Leao just said it all. The game is still active, and Rafael Leao like just drops his hands in frustration and turns away. Now, a player who's really locked in and a team that's really locked in keep chasing the ball just out of play and just watching Liao's frustration there. And this is not a criticism of him per se. It's just saying that is the general mood it feels around Milan at the moment, where they feel like they can't catch a break.
Mm.
And it's almost like...
reminds me a little bit of the Liverpool situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Not,
no,
not to the same degree.
No, does that make sense to say all that? Like, just where it's just, it's not working. We can't work out how to make it work anytime soon.
It's tricky, man, because once you lose that, like I said, man, once you lose that aura, like the drop off can be big.
Especially there isn't depth to challenge
exactly,
this place.
Yeah. And especially when that top five are all legit.
Yeah, because they're coming for you now.
Yeah, you can't half step now.
Lazio are cooking. Atalanta are cooking.
For sure. I mean,
Napoli
top
are
six,
moving.
Really.
Napoli are moving as well. Roma are moving. Roma got that act together. Roma had a couple of bad results. Then again, a loss to Cremonese, as it turns out, in this last couple of months, it's not that bad a look.
But if you look at like Milan have dropped 13 points in their last five games.
Awful.
This run of form that they really need to snap out of quick, because they're only 2 points behind Roma in third. And if that's not, they're only 5 points behind Inter. There's a long way to go.
And the second half was really encouraging. Second half was really encouraging.
Yeah. The one thing I do want to just shout out quickly was Martinez's disallowed goal, which we talked about. It was spiritually onside.
Yes.
But Barella's reaction was fucking amazing. Where all of a sudden, like Martinez does the amazing thing where he turns around and does the finger wag. It's like, we said this before in Stadia, but live your life with the confidence of a striker who is convinced they were onside.
Yes, yes.
Even though they were miles off. Just walk through life with that kind of flex.
That energy, I mean? Yeah.
No. Finger wag life. No. But Barella, if in the corner of the shot, has fallen onto his back with his hands over his face and he's just like, no way. And he's like rocking on the floor, like on his back. It's the most hilarious. Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like my nephew.
Oh my God, yes.
Who's 15 months old, by the way.
Jack knifing your body in the airport because you're not getting an extra treat.
Listen,
I see
just
public displays.
Honestly, my nephew is the most dramatic human being, by the way. He's hilarious. But anyway, could not stop laughing at that. Anyway, massive win for Inter. They are second in the table. We mentioned another win for Napoli, man.
Handling business, Kvaratskhelia
so
and Osimhen.
They're just so good. We're probably going to have to skip the rest of Serie A.
And that's
we're going to have to skip most of La Liga. But
Just mention the headline. The headlines are...
Well, I wanted to do the headlines via a Sid Lowe tweet.
Go for it, yeah.
He said, Mallorca beat Madrid. Celta beat Betis. Elche won against Villarreal. Valladolid won at Real Sociedad. Only one of the top seven won. Only one of the bottom six lost.
Wild.
How about that?
Love that.
Incredible.
Great win for Barcelona as well, 3-0 Sevilla. And great win for them. And yeah, the Mallorca loss, just quickly to mention that, because they looked really good actually in the first game of the season against Madrid. So
yes,
them winning this is a really fair reflection of how those games have gone. Yeah, it's justice. Yep.
Because that was the Fede Valverde, fuck it, I'll do it then.
Nacho Fernandez, just the most casual celebration. You score a winner against Madrid, and you're just like, yeah, it's calm. Just jog off, you know, high fives. So yeah, really, really impressive for Mallorca and a well-earned win there.
Yes. We're also going to swerve the Bundesliga, but it was basically as you were at the top.
Well, as you were, being Union beating Mainz 2-1 to remain top of, well, to go top.
They went top,
Before Bayern got it back. Wolfsburg then capitulating 4-2.
Yeah.
It was the one slightly
bad
sad moment.
Neutrals.
They subbed off, was it Lacroix after like half an hour? And he was really upset. They subbed off a defender, Kovac, when they went
3-0 down after.
And I feel really bad for like defenders catching heat like that, because when a team goes down that much that quickly against Bayern, it's normally a systemic failure, not an individual one.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, Bundesliga looking interesting. And also shout out to Sebastian Haller, his first start in a home Bundesliga match for Dortmund, scoring a header in a 5-1 win over Freiburg. Big win. Christian Streich getting a red for arguing with decisions on the touchline. But bless him, in the post-match, he was so contrite. He was so contrite in the post-match, Ryan. He was just like, oh yeah, this was my stupidity to like appeal like this.
I mean, you know, it's rare that Christian Streich.
Yeah, and I have to say, that,
like he rarely misses.
He was really contrite. I have to respect that. Yeah, great win for Dortmund. Great win for Dortmund there.
I'm a little bit worried about how many goals Freiburg is shipping at the moment, but.
You say that, but then again, don't forget, Union got hammered as well, and they managed to bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, it is worth that they played after 17 minutes on, they were playing with 10 men. Suddenly they got sent off. So.
Yeah. Can I say one last thing from the Bundesliga? One last thing. Kolo Muani is absolutely balling out for Eintracht. If you get a chance to watch him, even if it's just some highlights, he got two against Hertha at the weekend, and he's looking like an absolute Rolls Royce. Like he's looking at, watching him play, watching his body language, watching his touch, his assurance, I'm looking and thinking, he's now putting himself into a conversation, elite young world number nines. And that there cannot be a big move in the next couple of years, cannot be far away for a player like that. He is absolutely,
oh yes,
he's playing lights out football.
I stayed in Germany very quick. Frauen Bundesliga was back this weekend. And
yes.
Wolfsburg
doing work.
Beat Freiburg 4-0 away. Eintracht beat Meppen 1-0. But unfortunately, Bayern's game at Turbina was postponed due to a frozen pitch. Something, a theme that we talked about on Wrighty's House not too long ago.
And much counter-pressed,
counter-pressed as well. So that was a shame. But yeah, Frauen Bundesliga is back. And just a quick shout for Asha Satoshwala, who has scored 3 hat-tricks in her last... Or 3 hat-tricks in the last 4 Barcelona games. Barcelona won 7. They beat Betis 7-0 on the weekend.
She is a player who got locked in and then never left it. You know, some players just get the zone. She absolutely added that to her game, man. She's cooking.
Absolutely. Anything else? Are we good for today?
I think we're good. We're good.
Good for today?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah, just a quick reminder. We'll... With the Man City stuff, because it's just broke, we're going to do what we usually do with stuff like this, and we'll probably hold off for more reaction from Manchester City or even a judgment before we analyse this and do a deep dive, because this isn't a huge surprise that something like this has come.
No.
But I feel like the real important thing is the judgment.
Yeah.
Because that is the thing that could be super, super seismic. I think this is unprecedented as it is, but I feel like we wait for that before doing the proper deep dive.
Yeah.
Cool with that?
That's fine. That works.
Don't forget, if you want to come and see us in London, a few tickets left on Thursday night at King's Place. Check the link on our Twitter if you want to buy them. Apart from that, there won't be a podcast on Thursday, but we'll be back next week. And we'll also be with Ian on Wrighty's House on Friday. Don't forget to check the Stadio Actuals Place on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out on Watching Out by the Split Decision Band. A great name for a band. Anything else you want to add, Mr. Bongo?
Nothing further.
Cool. All right, everyone. Stay well. Much love. And we will be back with you next week.
See you then. Everybody's watching up. Everybody's watching up for a brand new love. Everybody's true. What the thing you do, I want to catch your fooling. Because my darling, you party all night long. About the thing you do, and you never know when to stop. See, my darling, you party all night long. It's true about the thing you do. And you never know when to stop. Hang on. Hang on, hang on. What you say now? Hang on, hang on. Hang on, baby. Hang on, hang on. Hang on, hang on. Little girl, little boy. Everybody's watching up. Everybody's watching up. Oh,
thing you do, and you never know.